For today's In Touch, I'm joined by Neil Adams, a comic book artist known for helping create the imagery of Superman and Batman we're familiar with today. The 73-year-old began working with DC and Marvel Comics in the late 60s and 70s and has contributed in recent years. He's in Iowa for a convention in Des Moines and took the time to talk with me about conventions, the history of comic books in the United States, and his thoughts on modern adaptations of Batman and Superman. What's the atmosphere at these Comic-Cons, whether it be in, you know, California or Iowa?
Well, let me try to put it this way. If you go to the circus, you know, it's for like 2 hours and you're exhausted and you go home and you throw up because of the hot dogs and all the rest of it. This lasts for 2 or 3 days and you don't throw up. That's pretty much like it. You're going to have a great time. You're going to meet people are coming in cosplay. That means they wear costumes. You're talking about your neighbors who come and take photographs of each other and pose for photographs in their favorite poses or their poses that their characters pose in. You're going to have showbiz people like William Shatner and Alex Kingston and Brandon Routh, who played Superman and who is now on Arrow. And Elvira's going to be there, and Dean Cain's going to be there, and James O'Barr, who created The Crow. I don't know if you're a fan of The Crow, but I am. Michael Golden, I'm going to be there, of all things. And then you're going to have booths that you can buy things at, toys and swords and ray guns and all kinds of stuff. I mean, to put it succinctly, it's a shopping tour of your fantasies. But you do have to bring money. Because if you don't, the first 10 feet that you get in there, you're going to go, oh, I want that.
Well, that's America, though.
That's America. There you go.
Well, people probably aren't dressing up. They might be, correct me if I'm wrong, as Neil Adams, but probably as the characters that you're famous for drawing.
Well, Green Arrow, of course. Superman, Batman, certainly Batman. There'll be at least 2 or 3 Batmans there. They drive in from other towns. This is not, you know, the locals. This is everybody. They'll drive in for 2-3 hours just to get to these conventions and put on costumes and just have a great time. There's artwork for sale. There's comic books for sale. Some people bring their comic books in and sell them and then buy other ones. It's just a great time, and there's nothing like it. America has gone from, what was it last year? It was something like 70 conventions of 20,000 people to this year 100 conventions a year of at least 20,000 people. There's only 52 weeks in a year. That's like 2 conventions, 3 conventions on some weekends in different parts of the country. And small conventions are cropping up everywhere. This year, there's going to be close to 500 little conventions all over the country. It's blossoming everywhere. And all our movies are being made based on comic books, our computer games, new television shows are springing up. You can't blink without a new television show springing up. And they're not just, you know, guys in tights. You know, the Daredevil television show is very gritty and adult-like. And then the Supergirl show is much more for kids and for, you know, young adults. There's a wide variety of television shows. Then there's computer games. It's everything. It's, you know, penetrating the culture. You can go to a movie, and you can watch a movie for 2 hours and say, well, at least that's not comic book-based. And then at the end, it says, based on a graphic novel by so-and-so. And sure enough, it was. It's amazing.
Is that something you've seen in the past, maybe decade, this kind of boom in the comic book industry?
Oh, you have to understand, in the 1950s, America, the only country in the world paranoid enough to do this, attacked comic books in Congress. And there was an implication that comic books led to juvenile delinquency and led to sexual perversion and all kinds of stuff, sort of like rock and roll. And it appeared on television. You know, this was after the Army McCarthy hearings. It appeared on television. And America kind of attacked comic books and put it down. So a lot of parents didn't let kids read comic books. They were wholesome and good for reading and good for all kinds of stuff. Yet the country kind of turned against them. It didn't happen in Europe, and it certainly didn't happen in Japan, where they read comic books on subways and in restaurants. But in America, we did that. So it's taken us a few decades to come out of that. And for comic books to move toward the place that they probably were intended to be in the first place, and that is to be an incredibly popular medium. There is no downside to comic books. It's visual and word storytelling. It's the kind of things that kids, let me give you an example. I never saw a kid purchase a children's book with his own money, but they buy comic books. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
When you look at what you do, words like penciler and inker come up. What does that mean for someone who's unfamiliar?
Well, if you have a finished piece of art that's going to be reproduced, you want to have it in ink. Before you have it in ink, you want to draw it in pencil so that you know what the ink is going to be. So it's what's called a preliminary. But once you give that to an inker, or the artist himself inks it himself, then you erase the page and the pencil disappears and all that's left is the ink. So that would be the inker. You have letterers who do, of course, the lettering in the balloons. Now it's done mostly by computers. Of course, you have writers that are very much like writers of film and television. They write a script and they describe what's going on in the scenes. And then the penciler draws those scenes, and then the inker inks those scenes. Then the colorist, of course, goes in and colors those scenes, mostly, again, today on computer.
Has the industry changed in other ways with the growth of technology?
Well, it's spread out by being, you can read comic books on the Internet, and a lot of people do. About 6% of the readers read comic books on the Internet, but mostly those are readers who never read comic books before. So it's a very comfortable way to read comic books, also a very comfortable way to read books. I mean, we're finding a big shift to, you know, reading comic books on that screen. And although that, and many people thought that that was going to be bad for comic books, that it was going to take away from the comic book stores, but in fact what happened is that people will read their comic books on the Internet and then after a while walk by a comic book store and say, you know, I think I want a hard copy of that. And they go in and buy a graphic novel or they start buying comic books. So the proliferation of the Internet comic books has increased the sales of comic books in the comic book stores. And those comic book stores, which used to be foreboding in a kind of negative, you know, dungeon-like way, are now appearing in supermarkets. They're appearing with lights, neon lights, and shiny floors or wood floors, so grandma isn't afraid to go in and see what the grandkids are reading. So it's become a much more middle-class kind of community response where mom and dad and the kids go to the comic book store together. It used to be just dad or just the kids, but now it's everybody. So you're seeing a revolution in the industry and an acceptance in the popular culture of this form. And people are now actually teaching it in colleges. They're teaching the change and the evolution of comic books in America. And remember, America, I don't like to be pushy about America, but every once in a while I have to be. We do it best. I know it's arrogant to say, but America just does it best. And the Europeans and the Japanese and everybody around the world are learning from us, and they're being hired by us to do comic books. So you have the best artists around the world coming to America and submitting their work to be produced in American comic books. So just like Hollywood produces the best movies, and I think I can say that with absolute assurity, America produces the best comic books. And America is the gathering place for quality comic book, quality artwork, where you used to have artists doing illustration work for the Saturday Evening Post and Life magazine when we had those magazines. Now those artists are doing comic books, illustrating comic books. Is that a come down? You know what? I don't think so.
Well, you sound passionate about comic books. Is that how you started before you actually became so involved? Yeah, so involved and so kind of
sure.
Synonymous with being a artist for a comic book.
I guess if I had any highfalutin attitude about anything, maybe I wouldn't be quite so enthusiastic about comic books. And I'm just not the type of person that was raised that way. If you enjoy something, you know, if you enjoy a popsicle, it's a good thing to eat. That's how I feel about it. And if you enjoy a Star Wars or Star Trek movie, it can get an Academy Award and ought to get an Academy Award. And if comic books are a medium that's up and coming and artists and writers and people are attracted to them and it becomes a feeding ground for our media, how bad can you describe it? Let me put it one other way. If you put the best artist in the world alongside the best writer in the world and you had them produce a graphic novel, wouldn't that be the best piece of art in the world?
By definition.
I mean, that's how I do math. You know, it's just pretty simple. You put good people together, they're going to do good work, and that's just a fact. And well, so I don't think I'm unrealistically enthusiastic about comic books. I think comic books are a fantastic medium. They always have been. It's just that, you know, when they were attacked so long ago, and people, again, like rock and roll and like, you know, computer games, you can raise a lot of hoorah about, you know, the negative side of it. But when you examine it and you realize how much good it does, for example, the first things that kids read are comic books, and they'll go to the dictionary to find out what those words mean because they want to read the comic book. Most of the literate people that I know started off as comic book readers. Most of the directors, and I know a number of directors and screenwriters, wanted to be comic book artists and writers. Scratch a director, scratch George Lucas, scratch Steven Spielberg. They'll tell you they wanted to be comic book artists. It's amazing that this field attracts these people, and then they spread out into the creative community and in many, many, many cases do other things. But they still relate to the comic book community. They get it. And that's what the community of creatives across America and the world is. Is there's this, I don't know, call it Geek Fest, that all these people who are geeky are attracted to comic books, good film, good television, and all these things, and they trade information, and they become the creators of the next generation of material. I'm sure you're a little bit of a geek.
Yeah, a little bit.
Then you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Finally here, do you have any strong reactions or emotions, you know, positive or negative, when you're seeing modern adaptations of characters that you've worked with?
I feel that that's exactly like turning a character over to another artist and writer, that they're going to do another interpretation. If they do a poor interpretation, I'll judge them on their goals. If they do a good interpretation based on their goals, then I'll judge them well. It's just like anything else, just like another comic book artist or writer. If they do a lousy job, they do a lousy job, you know? There was a Superman movie made recently that sucked. I mean, how to put it in another phrase. It had great effects in it, and the actor was terrific. I liked the movie, talking about this latest Superman movie. But I don't think that Superman should kill anybody. I don't think he should fight his battles in cities where thousands of people could die. I don't think there's a planet called Earth where there's a dog that's in a car that doesn't get out of the car before everybody else in the car, but stays in the car. I have never seen that dog. Why did that dog stay in that car? I have no idea. Because as far as I know, when the car parks, the dog is the first one out, running around in a circle, waiting for the family to get out, and if he could say anything, come on, come on, come on, come on, let's go and play. Dogs don't stay in cars. So these premises that this movie was based on doesn't make any sense. The father says to the son, well, maybe you should have let the other kids die. No! You don't let the other kids die. You're Superman! I mean, what an insane thing. I mean, it was just badly done. So does it bother me when that happens? Yes, that does bother me if they make a bad product. If they sincerely make a good product and it's 100% different from mine, that's just fine. I couldn't care less. But if they make a bad product based on their own goals, I don't think that's so good.
Do you think trailers are a good indication of whether or not a movie is going to be good? Talking specifically about that Batman and Superman trailer.
You have to wonder about that, because I think a lot of times they do trailers to fake you out. You know, like the stuff for the Batman-Superman movie. I think they're just faking you out with photographs and stuff. But what is that? I don't get that. Is that really what Wonder Woman is going to look like? But I think in the end, they're probably going to end up making a good product. I can tell you where the trailers really mess it up is that John Carter of Mars movie. That John Carter of Mars movie had the worst trailer in the world, and the movie was fantastic. And audiences out there have missed one of the greatest movies ever made because it had a lousy trailer. And it's terrible and sad that that happened, because that was one hell of a movie. I think the teasers on the Superman-Batman movie are a little off, because you know what? They're not really doing Superman-Batman. What they're doing is Frank Miller's Superman-Batman, which takes place 20 years in the future, where Superman has become something of a god, and Batman has got to stop him, and he thinks of ways as a human being that he could stop a Kryptonian. And so when you see him in that battle armor is armor to fight Superman, which you can't wear your regular Batman outfit. So you're looking at Frank Miller's futuristic Batman Superman, not Batman Superman. And I am really sorry that the film company is not announcing that. No, this isn't Superman Batman of today. This is Frank Miller's Superman Batman. You should read that. And if you don't read it, let me tell you what it's about. Hey, you know what I'm saying? And when that gets done, everybody will go, oh, I get it. It's the future when these guys are older men, or at least Batman is older. It seems like Kryptonians don't get very old. And that's what happens. That's why Robin is a girl, because it's six generations of Robins down. That's not Robin. That's Frank Miller's six generations down Robin, which in his book was a girl. So it's throwing you off. And I think once people get it, I think people will go, oh, cool. It'll be cool.
You're going to be at the Wizard World Comic Con.
Yes, and everybody should come to my table and buy prints. Make sure you have money in your pocket. If you have little kids, I'll draw pictures of Batman for free for them. But yeah, come on down. Have a great time.
And you'll be there each day?
Every day.
Neil, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
That was my conversation with comic book artist Neil Adams for this edition of In Touch with Southeast Iowa. For KCII News, I'm Nathan Swenson.